One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's video game season. It's Key 3 doing the rounds. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
This is The Wind-Up, where we will wind each other up more than usual. Now, The Wind-Up is usually a gathering up, a smattering of whatever the latest video games are. But like I said, it's video game season. Everyone keeps referring to it as E3. However, I saw a GameSpot hoodie saying Key 3.
I bet Jeff Keighley loves that.
He loves that. Why has he not coined that? I mean, he might as well. He's going for the jugular left, right, and center. But there's a ton of different video games to talk about, whether it be from the Summer Games Fest, the Xbox and Bethesda stream, the Capcom stream. Even as we record this one day later, because I was off yesterday, there's another Xbox stream tonight, and then there's a Square Enix thing tomorrow, and there's a Final Fantasy VII anniversary thing, which might be the same thing, but there's a lot of games.
It is video game season, my friend.
And what a season.
I couldn't be happier, because, you know, we've lamented the lack of releases for the rest of 2022 for a long time on this podcast, and suddenly the video game industry was like, oh, you want games coming out for the rest of the year? Do you? Into 2023, do you? Here they are.
Let me tip this bucket up and watch everything fall out and then try and allocate it. There's pretty much one big thing a month.
Yes.
So there's a lot more stuff to look forward to for the rest of this year. There's also a lot of stuff coming at the start of 2023. Xbox's whole thing was that everything they talked about is coming within a 12-month window. So that takes you through to next summer. But we'll do the festivals. The festivals? They are kind of festivals.
Yeah.
We'll do the showcases in order. So we'll start with Key 3/ the Summer Games Fest. And we can just talk about the stream overall. What hit you about the overall thing before we potentially dip in on specific games?
How kind of boring it was, Scott Telford. if I'm being brutally honest, this was a 2-hour show, and there were moments where I was just thinking, why am I watching this? You know, the big Dwayne Johnson kind of promo for Black
the Rock,
Adam.
Yeah.
Like, I love The Rock. I love Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
But when he's talking for like 8 minutes, rambling about Black Adam during his video game show.
He had no idea what he was doing.
No.
Like, I mean, like I said, I love The Rock. Grew up with the man. Not in person. Wasn't at my school. But I did watch him a lot. And I think he was just in the middle of a workout. And someone went, hey, Mr. Johnson, you need to do this thing. They're live streaming to you right now. And he's like, oh, what? Sorry. And then he sort of hopped on a mic, a call. And that was the most rambling man. Like, I'm born a rambling man. He's the new rambling man.
100%.
Yeah, overall, it was funny because I remember you messaged me because I was out that night. You messaged me saying it's a bit boring, it's a bit naff. And then I got home and I watched the archive stream, and the opening of it had Midnight Fight Express on.
Right.
And I forget what their opening initial first trailer was, but I was like, this is brilliant. This is great. And then that opening page just did not hold up whatsoever.
That's it. You know, there was certainly, like we're going to get into, there were a lot of games, if I look at it, that I was interested in. It just kind of, it lacked the pace that I wanted, and it lacked those big hitters for me that would have kind of accentuated it. So it was like, it was fine. Like, it wasn't like a complete disaster, but like I said, it was a little bit boring. Like, the highs weren't high enough to keep me, like, you know, really sustained. But like I said, there were still a lot of games that were announced or re-announced or shown off again that I'm looking forward to. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about the Callisto Protocol.
My boy.
I know that you loved, like, the extended, what's it called? Like, the Scorpion cut.
Yeah,
that trailer.
They're like embracing the fact that, yeah, Glenn Schofield, creator of Dead Space, dude is all over the marketing for Callisto Protocol, because I think because he's fully aware that EA are saying the Dead Space remake is coming, so he's trying to get out there as much as possible, saying, not without me, it's not. This is the new Dead Space.
100%, like, and he's talking about how deeper it is than Dead Space and stuff, and let me tell you, like, I'm looking forward to this game, but it looks like Dead Space.
It's a lot of Dead Space.
Yeah,
like, I think he's kind of trying to, like, carry across the fandom, let's say, by sort of, like, ticking the boxes, reminding you of Dead Space 1, but then kind of elevating stuff as well. The gory deaths that were in there look incredible. Like, some of the finishes, you know, when you sort of take out different enemies' limbs, or when you get taken out by a certain creature, proper Mortal Kombat 11-style gore, where they've clearly modeled an entire physiology of a human being, and it's like, okay, this is bone and musculature and everything else, and some creature's just going to bite right through a skull at weird angles that we've never seen before. I love that stuff.
Me too, man. Like, the just like the dedication to gross out gore was amazing to see. I love that in the actual gameplay itself, although it is very clearly aping Dead Space, it feels like it's doubling down on the telekinesis kind of part of the Dead Space combat, which was always like low-key incredibly fun to be able to chain together, you know, throwing a necromorph's kind of spiky limb at it, then like going in for the stomp and then going in for a shot. Like, you could do things with that combat system that were way more complex than may have initially appeared, and hopefully with them using or expanding on that power set in this game, like, you get to chain those combos a little bit better. And
I'm kind of hoping that they're front-loading all the footage of, you know, it's like Dead Space 101. So remember these powers, remember that. Even like, we've got the label of the next room you're about to go into is above the door, and it's like, this looks just looks like Dead Space. And right down to the sort of health bar being on the guy's suit and everything. I hope that the marketing is front-loading that, because they're going to take it off in a direction that'll be like what Dead Space 3 should have been, let's say.
Right.
Or something like that. Because, yeah, Glenn Schofield didn't leave under very good terms. Like, you know, he's very much been very vocal about FEA and all that kind of stuff. And I hope that after this long, it's not just, hey, I've done a Dead Space with better gore, because he has been out there talking about most of development has been creating this sort of new gore system and making sure they nail that, and then they want to go forward after that. So I hope there's just more to it. I'm up for more Dead Space.
Me
but I hope that this dude has brought more to the table.
But it's going to be funny if they release that game in December and say, hey, it's more Dead Space but with better gore, and then the Dead Space remake comes out in January and they say, hey, it's more Dead Space but with better gore. Hey, which one are you going to buy?
That's the thing. I think that I maintain the only reason that EA greenlit a Dead Space remake is because of Callisto Protocol.
Right.
Because they can just go like, oh no, we might as well cash in on this. There's going to be a lot of mention of Dead Space anyway, so we might as well get in on this. Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'll tell you what kind of summed up Key 3 for me.
Yes.
Did you see the Aliens Dark Descent trailer?
I did.
Well, that started and I thought, this looks really good. This looks like it could be something. And then it showed like a brief 3-second snippet of gameplay, and it was one of those
you
where
died
I'm like,
inside.
Oh, this is, you've had a trailer that kind of promises one thing, and then you've shown the gameplay, and it's like, you know when mobile games, is a mobile game,
yes.
But you know when you have like a really flashy trailer for like a mobile game, and then you see the gameplay, and it's like, these could not be more different. I got that vibe where I was high, I was like elated, and then I was low. It was like the Aliens game release cycle compressed into a trailer.
Oh, God.
Normally, for me, when I see one of these games, I'm like, maybe it could be good, maybe it could be good. Then it comes out and I'm like, oh. But this was all condensed into 3 minutes. Which...
Would you like another top-down squad-based, assumedly loot shooter, but something like that?
I'm all right.
You're probably all right. I would have loved if that game was turn-based. Give me anything with a grid. I'll give me a grid-based alien game.
Whoa.
Give me that. I mean, sort of getting in position as a xenomorph and then pounce on a dude.
That would be good. It's funny that I thought about being the Marines and you went to being the xenomorph.
I'll be the xenomorph.
Maybe it could be multiplayer and we could play against each other.
This is already a better idea than what they showed off. But I was going to pivot into The Last of Us 1 remake, more so because the discourse that came out of the show overall was the idea of ending on a remake. Like, is that something that can be a showstopper? It did leak early, so some people like us already knew that was the case. Jeff Keighley even tweeted out an emoji of someone doing a shrug, being like, well, I guess my biggest thing is already out there. But they did show off Last of Us 1, you know, remake gameplay footage and stuff like that. I couldn't tell the difference. I just couldn't. After I watched it a bit more, I could. But opening on that shot of Ellie looking out the window was always one of the most graphically impressive shots of the original anyway.
Absolutely.
And so when they showed that, and when the images leaked on Twitter beforehand, I was like, is this... I literally couldn't tell. And so it's only been watching more of it, and I've gone back. And I watched the trailers on the PlayStation Store and everything now. So I've watched a lot more of it. And sure, it looks fine. I think I way prefer older Ellie and old Joel, though. I'm not a big fan of the Last of Us 2 character models in Last of Us 1.
Interesting.
Personally,
it's funny with this remix. It's all going to come down to a certain level of just personal preference.
Yeah, it's like splitting hairs.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, we've been with these character models for so many years now, and then suddenly for them to change, everyone's of course is going to be like, oh, you couldn't, you know, just kept it the same. You know, rightfully wrongfully is the word.
Yes.
For me, I think it is funny that you mentioned, you know, the shot that they opened on with Ellie in the car. Like, that scene in the original game is always the one where I go, like, this is incredible. Like, this looks amazing. So I need to kind of reconcile that with the fact that presumably then it was a pre-rendered cutscene, and now it's all in-engine, which is quite impressive in itself that now we have the in-engine character models that match, you know, this really high-fidelity cutscene from a game 8 years ago or whatever. But yeah, it's just... it worked for me because it wasn't just the remake, because it was, you know, Neil Druckmann talking about factions, talking about the TV show. It was a big Last of Us love-in. If it was just the remake's trailer, I would have probably been with you and being like, this is a little bit disappointing. But because it was like, here's the future of The Last of Us in all of its forms, I was more on board.
I say this on some of the podcasts we did? I so do not care about the franchising of The Last of Us.
Right.
I think I said this on the UBP. I just don't need it. Like, it was an immaculate one-off. Like, I didn't need two. I thought it was immaculately well made, but when I hit the credits on part two, I was like, I didn't need that. It worked. I was in bits. I was like, oh, this all landed emotionally, and the characters are phenomenal, and whatever. Give all the awards to Laura Bailey and Ashley Johnson. But at the same time, I just don't need it. I just don't need it at all. And so I kind of just look at this, and I'm just like, this was one great story with some great characters, and you're pulling all these threads to flesh it out, like the single player story stuff that's going to be in the factions multiplayer game, whatever the hell that thing turns into. It's like a hybrid thing. I don't care. I'm curious because it's Naughty Dog, but I don't know. I have this thing with Naughty Dog where I don't feel like they've lost their way, but I just like, I didn't need you putting this much money into the Last of Us 1 remake. Like you said, it's only 9 years old anyway, and it still plays immaculately. We've already had the remaster.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't need you to GTA 5 The Last of Us, like where it's, oh, here it is again, guys. Like, I just don't, I don't know. I kind of just feel, I look at it and I feel nothing.
That hurts me a little bit.
I just wanted to put their money into new stuff.
I get that 100%. You know, I am kind of similar to you, but we kind of branch off Until Dawn style down to different emotions style with this stuff, the Quarry style, because I'm kind of similar. When The Last of Us 2 was announced, I was kind of thinking, oh, do we need this? I was like, do we need a Last of Us multiplayer suite? But every single time I've played whatever they have produced, like, I've been won over. You know, I loved Factions. I loved the first game. I loved the second game. So I'm like, yeah, my brain might say you don't need this, but when it comes, I probably will enjoy it. Like, I'm looking forward to them expanding what Factions was. I thought that was incredibly underrated and a great time. Same. Like, I'm looking forward to the TV show. I like that Neil Druckmann is so heavily involved in directing an episode. Like, that's really neat. I like that Ashley Johnson and Troy Baker announced that they were in the show as more than cameos. So I do kind of get exactly what you're saying, that I would like them to make something new, but also if they're going to franchise The Last of Us, I'm pleased that they seemingly are doing it well.
Yeah, it's definitely got like care and attention put in. I just think that I just struggle to care about something that felt so isolated. Like, for the longest time, Last of Us 1 was held up as, this game does not need a sequel.
Yeah.
Or this game does not need more stuff. And so, yeah, I'm curious what these things are when they come out. I just don't have that inbuilt. I don't care. I don't have that inbuilt excitement for it. I'm just curious. I hope they haven't messed it up. I'm curious what changes they make, etc. In regards to Neil Druckmann, though, he mentions that his new game is like in progress or whatever. I don't think they give it a name or anything, but it's just, we always knew that behind the scenes at Naughty Dog, half of the team went off to remake The Last of Us 1, half of the team stayed with Druckmann to design whatever their next thing is. That's what I'm more interested in. Because for the longest time, it was rumored to be a big old sci-fi thing, potentially teased in Savage Starlight as the comic that Ellie reads in Last of Us, and that was potentially some working title at some point for something they were going to work on. That's what I care about. I care about the future of Naughty Dog, because for me, like, you know, we grew up with them doing a franchise per generation, and then they broke that last gen. They did Uncharted 4, and then they did Last of Us 2. And so, like I said, it's not that they've lost their way, but I loved their ethos, how they used to have it. It was like, we do one big thing per console generation, and we purposefully move on. And now we're purposefully not moving on. We're purposefully staying still and doing more of this. And I'm like, cool, you'll do it really well, but you guys are so talented. I'd love to see what you have next.
No, it's true. And I, again, in part, I do fully agree. You know, I want to see what IP that they come up with next. I want to see what Neil Druckmann's next project will look like. I guess they're just kind of in this weird, almost transitionary period where even The Last of Us Part 1 remake like wasn't initially their idea or anything.
No,
it's
true.
That Jason Schreier report on Bloomberg is to be believed from last year, which kind of broke the fact that it was real in the first place. Mm. Like, apparently it was started at a different company, then it was moved to Naughty Dog, which popped me when Neil was out there like, oh yeah, we really wanted to make this game. Like we really wanted to do it. It's like, you didn't even like, you were just like handed this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of maybe why I cut it some slack, knowing that Naughty Dog kind of just handed this project.
Mm.
And it's almost, it's not something to do because I know that there's probably a lot of passion put into it, but like, it's a way for some of the developers who might not be actively working on an IP that is only maybe in pre-production to kind of, you know, spend their time creating something as a kind of stopgap release.
Almost. Yeah, yeah. What do you think of the way that, because I was talking to Jules about this, what do you think of the way they're potentially recontextualizing Last of Us 1 in the light of Last of Us 2? Like, the way that they cut the trailer for this was way more Ellie-focused than Joel. And obviously, if you know the way that Part 2 goes, then that's like way more Ellie-focused. And anyway, so I quite like the idea of when we look back, maybe after a Part 3, like Druckmann and Holly Gross, the writer for Last of Us 2, said they already did have an idea of what Last of Us Part 3 could be. So I quite like the idea of it being an Ellie trilogy. Yeah. But at the same time, it's interesting recontextualizing. You're making it a Part 1 now, fundamentally. And then having Ellie's a way bigger part of the box art, and like she's way more in the gameplay trailer. Joel's quite minimized in that respect. Like, what do you think of that stuff? Like, the idea of like making it a more solid overall arcing story rather than the one-off that it used to feel like?
For me, it works. Just kind of like, I was reading up on like the history of the franchise and stuff, and like just reading about them, you know, fighting to get Ellie on the box art of the first game at all and stuff like that. Like, you know, there was apparently some outlets that would like cut her out and just show Joel because that's
what sells.
Yeah, they thought it would just be like a guy, that's what's going to sell. So I like that, you know, their intentions, I think, always were to forefront Ellie as the main character eventually. Like, even in The Last of Us 1 game, like, it starts with Joel, and then it becomes Ellie's story. Like, there's a reason, like, there's a reason Part 1 ends with you controlling Ellie and not Joel. You know, like, the torch has been kind of, like, handed over to this new character, and then it's like, oh, God, she was the main character the whole time. And I like that this kind of, like, new trailer, this new box art is just kind of, like, confirming that in a way, as if it ever needed confirming. Like, for me, it's not even necessarily recontextualizing that much. It's just kind of doubling down on what they tried to do originally and maybe got a little bit of pushback for.
Well, Druckmann said there's a great talk. I forget where he did this talk, but you'll be able to find it if you did search, just, you know, YouTube, Neil Druckmann Last of Us talk or whatever, where he talks about the final scene in Last of Us 1 being that sort of the cut to black. And it was like, oh, you know, does Ellie know the truth or not? And he was like, it wasn't about that. It was about the fact that she had the power in that exchange. It's the one time that she finally has more power over Joel because he's kind of answering to her, and we know that she knows the truth. Like, there's always that back and forth of whether she does or not, but the assumption is that she does, and anything in that direction gives her the power in that exchange, and that was the point of that scene. And so those things are interesting. Also, with the history that you just mentioned there, that also makes them making her huge on the box art brilliant.
Yeah.
I kind of love that as an eventual win overall. But yeah, Last of Us stuff, the whole bunch of stuff coming out, like you said, the multiplayer and the HBO show and everything else. We mentioned Callisto before. Street Fighter VI, I think, looks absolutely gorgeous. One of the most strongest showings for a Street Fighter game in a long time. Like, reminds me of when Street Fighter 4 first got shown off, and it was like the really cool inky art style. 5, obviously, an absolute abomination, and then 6 looks gorgeous. I don't know if you're a Street Fighter fan or if you want to talk about Modern Warfare 2.
Street Fighter is too hard for me. My baby fingers cannot keep up with the combos that I need to be good at that franchise.
They've overhauled the controls for this one. There's a 2 control options. It's either classic, like the old days with the 3 different punches, 3 different kicks, or if you look at the modern control scheme on the controller map, it seems like you just hold a button and then they do an auto combo.
Right.
But they've made it so that like square is punch, X is kick, circles heavy kick or whatever, or grapple or something, and then the shoulder buttons are kind of your auto combos. So they're trying to get people on board, maybe like yourself, because I'm not a massive Street Fighter guy. Street Fighter 2, then that was like Street Fighter 4 I came back on. But yeah, like, I think they're trying to sort of be like, we are Street Fighter, we should be up there with modern Tekken.
Yes.
We should be this huge franchise. And Mortal Kombat's turning heads. Why is Street Fighter not up there? And obviously they bungled Street Fighter 5. So hopefully they turn this around. I think it looks unbelievable. The animation looks just incredible.
So fluid, so spectacular in terms of how those combos chain, like the way it looks. It's a new engine, isn't it? Is it the RE engine?
I think it's the RE engine. It's some new engine, because they have to remake a lot of stuff in it. And it's like set way later in the canon now as well. So you've got Beardy Ryu and everyone's older and whatever else. That game looks gorgeous. Modern Warfare 2 had a bit of gameplay. Again, it was like kind of leaked beforehand. The trailer was kind of out there. Where you come down on Modern Warfare 2?
I think I mentioned it the last time we talked about it, and my take has only solidified since. If this wasn't called Modern Warfare 2, I'd be like,
That's a cool 360 game, brother.
That's a cool 360 game. The name is doing a lot of heavy lifting. The belief I have in Infinity Ward after Modern Warfare 2019 is doing a lot of heavy lifting. But what I saw, I was just kind of like,
It's another
I think I tweeted out, you know, like, the head of Call of Duty was like, this year we've got oil rigs, we've got we've got warehouses, we got like these ships to look forward to. And I'm like, that's not what I look forward to in any game. I don't look forward to being on an oil rig, this grey oil rig.
It's a really shiny oil rig, Josh.
It certainly was.
I don't know. I thought, yeah, I mean, I love 2019's Modern Warfare. I think that's the best Call of Duty they've made.
Yes.
I say they, it's such a huge amount of studios. But I love that game. And then, yeah, with the trailer for this, I was just like, oh, yeah, okay.
Like Modern Warfare 2019, obviously, with it being like a reboot and a remake of that sub franchise, you know, lent heavily in some areas on the previous games in the franchise, but it also did like new things. Whereas the trailer for this was very much like, hey, you remember this level from Modern Warfare 1? Hey, you remember when you kind of did this in Modern Warfare 2? Like, you know, you had wet work, like the one that's on like the tanker ship, and it's kind of like you were taking this franchise in another direction, and now you're now just actively repeating set pieces from the previous games, and that's fine, but it's like
bankable, it's safe, it's boring.
Like you can do that in the multiplayer for sure. Yeah. Like the first Modern Warfare, you know, brought in and remastered and remade maps from Modern Warfare 1 and Modern Warfare 2, but it also had its own maps. It also had its own unique kind of identity in a lot of regards. And I hope this isn't just like a straight up remake of a game.
Yeah, well, they already did that. I remember when they sort of like weirdly advertised the Modern Warfare 2 remake, and it was kind of just a remaster. But the way that thing was tagged on to like 2019's Modern Warfare, I snapped that thing up thinking they'll have done more work to it. But it was just the original Modern Warfare 2. So that is also available on modern hardware. So yeah, that was the vast majority of the biggest things from Key 3, the SGF, the Summer Games Fest. And let's talk about Xbox / Bethesda. Let's just dive in. Starfield,
No
Man's Rim.
It certainly is. It certainly is. I cannot believe how much they are ripping from No Man's Sky. However, where we may differ is, I'm all right with that.
I tell you what's weird. I have been covering the fact that Starfield exists since, I think, 2014.
Wow.
I need to go back and look at my old author notes on the website on What Culture, because we covered this, it's like a decade ago, when it very first leaked that Bethesda's new IP was called Starfield. I just remember writing that up, and there was one image that did the rounds back then. And so when it eventually got confirmed, I think 2 years ago or whatever, when they finally said it was working, I was like, oh my God, it's real. Oh my God, it's that name that did the rounds like X many years ago. And now it's coming together. So I want to give them the benefit of the doubt that they had these ideas in flux anyway, you know, and they predate No Man's Sky, because obviously No Man's Sky launched in a weird sort of threadbare state. It was just sort of like space photography, the game, and mining and stuff. And then they've gone on to have base building and space dogfighting, or more better space dogfighting. And the way that the Wayfinder works and whatever, all the cartography stuff. And that's what this has, where it's like you're this space explorer and you have all these different tools and all these different conversations you can have with people and everything else. And so now they're comparable. But if you think about the development cycles, if Bethesda always planned this, it drastically predates No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
So like, it's a weird thing. But at the same time, I mean, IGN put a comparison out side by side. It is the same game right now. And it's just, it was just funny, because I was just like, you're zooming in and scanning a life form, then you're mining some rocks off the side of a thing, and then you're going to go and like stick a waypoint in the ground and scan for another base. I'm like, I've done this. I've done a lot of this.
You certainly have, Scott. And I totally get you wanting something more unique. But for me, if you take what No Man's Sky did well in terms of the space exploration and what have you, and slap that onto like a Bethesda-style RPG where you have factions and you have these kind of like complex quests and you have like these bases to go to, hubs of civilization, to me, I'm kind of like, yeah, it might be a little bit derivative, but that's a decent match, my friend.
I hope so. I think it's weird because like when they showed the first-person conversation stuff, I thought that looked ropey as hell. Like I thought surprised you thought it looked good.
This is a classic of Scott messaged me being like, those faces look dog. And I was like, I thought they looked quite nice. I actually thought they looked all right. Like, yeah, it looks very Bethesda, you know, 100%. But I thought they looked like a step up.
I was like, I mean, the actual like face texture, the render model, sure, but like the actual like lip sync was way off. Right. Like it just looked really robotic. It looked old. It looked like old Bethesda.
Right.
And I was kind of like, it was always going to be proof in the pudding with Starfield of how much have they improved, because Fallout 4 was like the last time you could have done this as an approach to a game design. And they have overhauled a lot of stuff. Most of Starfield looks like it moves a lot smoother than Fallout 4 ever did. But then you get to those conversations and it's just like the same thing, like big zoom to the face, lips that aren't matching the speech whatsoever. And I was like, oh yeah, it's still a Bethesda game. It's still they're still doing this thing on the same engine as Fallout 4. And so that was kind of my thing with that. But yeah, I just have to hope that the Bethesda magic is in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the only, for me, that's the only real thing it has. Because No Man's Sky does everything else so well. Like, yes. And when you come down on the planet stuff, because when they started talking about planets and they were like, oh, here's this one solar system. It's all handcrafted or whatever. And I was like, cool. You've done like six handcrafted planets. That's enough, Todd. That's great. And then they zoom out and literally did a No Man's Sky. We've got 1,000 planets that are all, and they're not going to be handcrafted. No. They're going to be procedurally generated. It's, I mean, that was a red flag for me.
100%. Watching like that extended gameplay reveal, I was thinking there is so much here that I think has promise and there is so much here that I'm scared about. And the planet thing was kind of a big yikes moment because, you know, bigger can sometimes be better. But when it comes to Bethesda's worlds, what I love is how handcrafted they felt. I think even if you don't really like Fallout 4, what it did really well coming off Skyrim, coming off Fallout 3, was kind of like the diversity and the density in the environment itself. Like that was, in my opinion, Bethesda's kind of like strongest open world visually in terms of what you had to do and whatnot. So to kind of go away from that and now have 1,000 planets, like you said, that you can fully explore. Mm-hmm. Like, that could be cool in theory. It just depends how sparse those planets are. So if they manage to nail it, I will be like, this is incredible. Mm. But just knowing the realities of, like, video game AAA development, I'm like, how can you make 1,000 areas satisfying to explore? There has to be a lot of duds in there, and hopefully is that worth the trade-off of not getting a kind of really dense, really detailed, smaller open world?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's a potential that it's like Mass Effect 1's planets, where I love the spacefaring nature of Mass Effect 1. Like, I think it's why it's my favorite in the trilogy, and it fluctuates whichever one I'm playing, but I like that idea. You can go planet to planet, and it feels like you are exploring a galaxy. I think that feels great. There's also that thing, though, of, you know, like the magic of a huge game. Like, No Man's Sky felt genuinely like magic, where it was like, oh my God, how have they done this? Procedurally generated animals, and even the music was sort of picking from different pockets, different banks of sounds. I remember one of their sound designers being, oh, if the game has generated a large creature, then it'll detune the music, so it's like a bassier growl or whatever. I was like, that's incredible. And I remember getting the game and getting the special edition, which came with an art book. And in the art book, it was like, okay, here are the 5 skeletons that the game pulls from when it's generating an animal. And I was like, oh, this, you've broken it, because now it's not infinite. Now it's 5 things and everything is built on this, and I can only see those skeletons now.
Yes.
And so right now they're in an interesting place where we don't know how they've made 1,000 planets. Have they procedurally generated them? Have they, like, you know, or have they gone in and handcrafted some stuff? Have they thought of some way of making this work?
Yeah.
And because I don't know if you remember, but you will remember, but like Mass Effect Andromeda was going to do the same thing. Before that game got chopped and changed down to like six planets or whatever it was, they were going to try and procedurally generate a ton of different planets.
Yeah.
And then they moved away from that because that game's development was all over the place. But I feel like a lot of people have tried this. And I wonder if you're Bethesda, maybe you've thought of some way of doing this. Because No Man's Sky now can do it immaculately. Like that game's planet generation is incredible, but it took a long time to get there. And so I'm very curious. Like we're in that weird space where it's magic and incredible and potential. Yeah. But my gut says that they won't nail it.
My gut says that they probably won't nail it. But my optimistic side says that they have had the time. Like they've taken more time with this than they ever did any other game that they made. And yet part of that is because it's a new IP. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they've had 7 years at least since Fallout 4. Shipped to get this right, and hopefully that's enough time to build out these planets, because you know it's not like they're building everything else from scratch for a new IP. Like even the shotgun reload animation looked like the one from Fallout 4.
Right.
Like they're obviously reusing a lot of assets, which is fine if it allows them to kind of make their ambitions a reality. And again, I just kind of need to see more. It makes sense why this game isn't ready to ship at the end of this year like it was supposed to, given the scale of it.
Yeah,
and it's kind of one of those things where I am really eager for a Bethesda game. However, is it going to be a smash on the level of a Fallout 4, of a Skyrim? You know, I don't know if it's going, is it going to reach that in a world where we've had The Witcher 3 and we've had a bunch of these other games that have taken the sandbox approach of Bethesda's older titles and kind of made it more polished, made it just as big and as ambitious.
The actual world, the actual galaxy that they've designed, like considering if you have carte blanche, your Bethesda, it's your first new IP in I think 25 years, it's a long time, and you kind of just do, here's an ice planet, here's like a jungle planet. I just like, oh my God, lads, like you do anything. Like Mass Effect Andromeda had that canvas as well, and the best thing they could do was floating rocks again.
Yeah.
Like give me a new world. Like right. I like the idea of the way that they're doing this, where it's kind of a bit like Firefly. It's very industrial. There's a lot of like industrious looks to factories, and the ship looks like it's literally cobbled together from all these big sort of like in like large moving parts, and you can do a lot of ship customization, which is cool, but I just like as a visual takeaway, I wasn't like, you know, I couldn't pick it up from a lineup really.
It was
one of those things where I was like, okay, I get what you're going for is because you're Bethesda, you're kind of taking it back to the basics and you're doing your sort of like totemic sci-fi where it's kind of like Firefly, it's kind of like Star Wars, where it's identifiable as like borderline sci-fi, baseline sci-fi, and then they'll build on it from there. And it has to feel like a world that makes sense. It can't have like weird, you know, a planet made of entirely water or whatever it is. But I'm still like, I would have liked something like that. Something a bit more unique.
When they did like the little montage of the biomes at the very end, I thought that looked quite interesting. But yeah, I fully agree with you in one sense that, you know, it's stuff we've almost seen before. But on the other hand, I do like the aesthetic that they're going for. Like I like that it's not an outer worlds kind of thing.
That's true.
We're going to go all primary colors. We're going to go a little bit cartoonish. This is like, right, we're going to go kind of somewhat vaguely inspired by, you know, older space age tech. And we're going to kind of like do like a 2001 rather than doing Aliens.
Might be a lot. Yeah, 2001's a great shout. And Interstellar as well. Yes. Like all the stuff that Chris Nolan like talked to NASA. It was like, if you guys had the infinite funding, what would you make? And they came up with those TARDIS robots and everything. Like, it's not that it didn't look promising. I just sort of, it was just, I don't know. I need to like just see what comes down the line with Bethesda, because I'm just like, I adored Skyrim and that was so long ago, and it's just it's been a rocky road since then.
Absolutely. Again, to be like cautiously optimistic, I always think that Bethesda games don't even look that good when you show them off in demo form anyway. Like when they started with the combat in this, I kind of laughed because it's like, who's here for the combat in a Bethesda game? Like it looked as clunky as ever, and that's fine because it's not like the main focus. But yeah, like I need to take a Bethesda game in totality. For me, it doesn't work when you kind of split it up and say, how good does this combat look? How good does this exploration look? Because it's all of those systems working together that makes them something magical. It's more than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. All previous Bethesda games have been like that for me. So it's one of those where I'm like, you can sell me only so far with trailers. I just need to get my hands on it at the end of the day. And then I'll know if it's something exceptional, if it's just all right.
I also, like, I mean, the one thing that for me was a bit missing from it, I can give it the ship customization was a new mechanic that looked cool. In terms of the way it was like put together, very Kerbal space program in terms of like dragging and dropping rockets and everything. And like making sure your ship can actually fly at the end of it. I look forward to being able to strap like 20 rockets to something and just like seeing if it just spins me out when I take off. But in terms of what you're doing, I feel like a lot of recognizable components were in there. Like the shooting was a bit Fallout 4. Obviously the conversations are Bethesda 101. Like it feels like we know how this is going to play, which is just like, I feel like I'm pooping on everything, but I'm just like, you're Starfield, you're Bethesda. Like where are the new ideas? And I think that the reason that I'm not like, oh my God, I can't wait to play that is because right, I know how that's going to play. Like I can play that right now. It's No Man's Sky, or I can play another Bethesda game and it's like that. Right. It's not that much of a step up. And it's not that what is there isn't worthwhile or like confidently presented. It's just one of those things where you kind of, you know, overall in the gaming industry, you kind of want the big leaders to be like, this is how it's done, guys. This is an idea you couldn't even have thought of until we did it. And right. It's like, you look at this and you go, well, you did the obvious thing. You did the thing that we knew you were going to do.
I know what you mean. It's difficult for me because I always get a bit iffy when you can say, well, you can play this because you can play No Man's Sky. And that is true. But I can't play No Man's Sky like in a Bethesda RPG.
With characters,
you know? So I kind of look at this and I'm like, yeah, it might be taking from other games. And yeah, you might be able to play versions of this. But can I play this exact thing? Like, if I'm looking at what Bethesda have done before, these kind of boots on the ground, for lack of a better term, RPGs, where you're kind of like quite rigid, to suddenly blow that up to having 1,000 planets and space travel and space combat, like that to me is definitely a big leap for them. Whether it pays off, I'm not sure. But in that regard, I wouldn't want to knock its ambition because it is that kind of thing of, yes, I can play a version of this in other games perhaps, but can I play a version that is so ambitious that it tries to bring all of these different elements together into one package? Like, that hasn't been done yet.
No, that's true. I think one thing that I want to know more about as well, which I think will be in some of their press releases, but it didn't front load the trailers, is the world design itself. Like, when Skyrim was coming out, we were getting hints of the Stormcloaks and the Imperials, and then Fallout was coming out. It was like, well, this is where it's set in the timeline, and then we're going to show you the world just before the nukes go off and whatever. With this, it's like, you're this explorer, you can customize them, and you work for whatever that band of people are called that go out there and sort of police the galaxy. But I need a little bit more, like, to that stuff. But yeah, overall, Starfield, like, a confident enough first showing, but I think the reception has been a little bit mixed because it didn't blow people away.
Totally.
But it's hard for them to do that when the idea of what blows people away is something more like potentially a Sony exclusive or something like that, or a first party game. And that's just not what they're making. They're not making an uber polished Horizon style game.
No.
They're reaching way more than that. And then seeing how much they can knit it together after that's been done. We should talk about Hideo Kojima jumping ship, even though that dude was never exclusive in the first place. As a lot of people are now finding out, Kojima Productions was never licensed entirely to Sony. He was always a third-party dev that signed on for Death Stranding, and is now the case. He's developing a cloud-based game for Xbox, which a lot of insiders have said is the episodic horror game that was cancelled for Google Stadia. Apparently, he was making a cloud-based game for Google Stadia, and according to VGC, it was cancelled when Google Stadia fell the F apart across the last few years. And it seems like Xbox have just gone, well, we've got a cloud. Do you want to put it on there? We've got a lovely little cloud for you. And so I think Kojima's going to be doing that.
I mean, it's exciting to see Kojima, but it made me laugh because Xbox did the thing that PlayStation did in 2015 at the end of that year after Metal Gear Solid came out, and obviously there was the big fallout with Konami, and Kojima went, and then he got Kojima on a stream, and he was like, we're announcing this partnership, we're going to do a game together, and then you didn't like see much else.
No.
Like, Xbox has done that exact same thing here, where they don't have a title, they have a genre, but they have nothing else, and it's like, guys, the reason that worked before is because there was so much momentum behind Kojima splitting from Konami and doing his own thing, and it's like, who's he going to partner with? Mm-hmm. What's he going to do next? Now he's got his own studio, and it's still exciting to see him, and it was a popper of a moment, but it wasn't as big as I think they maybe thought it was, because I would have liked at least, you know, a logo or something. I would have liked something more than announcement of a partnership, and it was kind of like, you tried to do what they did 7 years ago, but in a different context, and it wasn't as big of a hit.
You needed like a genre they said cloud-based game. You said, something I've never done before, but I had this idea for a long time or something. I agree. There was a lot of like, oh my God, it's Kojima. That's really cool. I wonder what he's going to do. But you capitalize on that by hitting it with something. You give it a name, you give it some project, whatever. Do something with that. Yeah, it was a bit of a sort of a wet fart after it got off the ground. But still, it's cool seeing Kojima sort of get around a bit more. I like the idea that his mind can be applied to multiple systems. And let's see what he can do with a Series X or whatever.
Totally.
And especially with cloud-based stuff. Some other announcements that I lost my mind for was Persona 3, 4, and 5 coming to Xbox. Xbox, more so because Persona 3 and 4 will now be readily available on modern consoles.
Yes.
Persona 4, let me just spell it out, is one of the best RPGs of all time, and that thing has been trapped on the PlayStation 2 and the PS Vita until right now. Go on.
Right, I'm going to jump in right now because that might be true. I will do not doubt that there is people that there are so many people out there who love that
series.
So many
people are nodding with me right now.
Yeah, waiting for these games to come to modern consoles. Yeah. However, is it not a little bit disappointing that those have now been announced for PlayStation as well? Yes, it was a big announcement at the Xbox showcase, but if we're talking purely like from analyzing an Xbox showcase in terms of its announcements and reveals and what it has for the future of Xbox, it's just like it's excellent, but is it a win for Xbox specifically? I don't think so.
Well, see, I think it is because Atlus for so long has been a PlayStation associated developer. It was always that thing where if you wanted to play a Persona game, you had to get something PlayStation or even before then. But still, that made me go crazy because I was like, oh my God, they've actually done a deal. Oh my God, they've actually talked to Atlus and managed to get these things across. I mean, it's like a 20-year deal in the making.
Right.
And so, it is a big win, but I know what you mean. When you went online, immediately it was like, and they're also coming to PlayStation, so don't worry about it. But at the same time, I think if you're a Persona fan, especially for Persona 4, you've just been going, why is this not available? Why is this game not available? Persona 4, like I said, it absolutely rocks. It's a perfect game. Just play it. Whenever it's available, just play it. So I think if you're a Persona fan for the last couple of decades, you've just wanted it to be available, and it was kind of a win in that regard. But right. I know what you mean. If they were making a new Atlus RPG and it was Xbox exclusive, that would have broke the JRPG community in half.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the fact that Xbox did this at all was cool.
I actually feel a bit harsh trying to throw water on that hype there. It is a cool thing, like you said.
Multi-platform announcement is not as big as an exclusive.
That was it. I was just kind of, I guess, trying to pivot into the idea that after this conference ended and I was reading online, and there was just so many of the games that were like, oh yeah, this is actually also coming to PlayStation. And it's like, that's to be expected.
But it's
almost like they try to hide it more than other years this time around. In fact, I was reading this morning that there might have even been an embargo on some of the games that they couldn't announce that were going to PlayStation for a couple of days afterwards. And I was like, that stuff's kind of lame.
Interesting though, because Sony do those, let's call them dirty tactics, all the time.
Yeah, right.
Different companies will pay to get their box arts on TV adverts or whatever it is. And Sony love a timed exclusive, more than the next man. Some of it's kind of fun with Xbox going, well, we can do this too. We can pretend that the long-awaited return of Persona 4 is on Xbox. And if we get that trending, then that's a whole thing. It's immediately undercut by the official account saying, don't worry, legacy fans, it's coming to your system too.
Yeah.
But I see what they're doing. I think that stuff's kind of interesting in regards to, like I said, the way that Sony have done business for so long. Persona series, it's Persona 3 Portable, I think, is the remastered-ish version of that game. Persona 4, Persona 5 Royal. It's Persona 4 Golden, which is the Vita re-release. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, Josh, but Persona 4 is coming. It's a good time. Diablo 4 also got a massive gameplay demo, which I was like, and Overwatch 2 was there as well.
Yeah.
And I was just like, someone at Blizzard, they've got to try and do something. I was just like, Overwatch 2, I was amazed that thing's still alive.
Me too, man.
I was just like, yeah, sure, do more Overwatch, I guess. Diablo looks promising enough.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I was surprised at how much I liked the look of Diablo 4. I like the kind of gothier aesthetic that they're going for. I didn't know it was Rod Ferguson who was doing it.
No, he's just left Gears of War.
I didn't even know he left the initiative. I must have missed that news. Now he's heading up this Diablo game. That's a strange move, but I mean, it looks like it might have paid off. I definitely am interested in that game in a way I never was before. But yeah, Overwatch 2, I was just thinking...
Yeah. Overwatch had the weirdest trajectory because I remember 2016 it dominated. I remember when me and Jules went to EGX and it was everywhere. Yeah. It was just oh my God, this thing is the second coming of a media empire. It felt huge. And it was, like I said, it was everywhere. And then they started adding DLC characters and some of them were fun and whatever, but I feel like everybody dropped off when the DLC characters came in terms of the mainstream pull. Mm. It still maintained a fan base and it still does have a fan base, but it just feels like that initial wave of, oh my God, Pokemon Go levels of, oh my God, went away when they started trying to add to it. It was just this weird thing where people were like, well, I can't keep up with this. I can't keep up with all these balance changes and all these different characters and everything. And so I kind of wonder if Overwatch 2 manages to reignite that. I don't think it will. I think they'd be better off keeping it as Overwatch the platform and making a big deal about we're adding to this.
Right.
Because otherwise it's going to be a Destiny 2 situation where there's no point, no reason that game has a number after it. It's just Destiny. It's what everyone calls it. Anyway, Diablo 4, very strong showing. That game's obviously been talked about for a long time. But That's the most gameplay they've shown off for it. And we also got another trailer for Hollow Knight Silksong.
Yeah,
confirming
boy.
It's real, but not giving you a release date.
Not giving you
yet
a release
again.
Date. That is, I mean, I've only been a Hollow Knight fan for like a year now. And even that's been too much for me to endure. The Silksong, are they going to release it? Are they not going to release it? Dance. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see it. I liked that they started the show with it, right?
I like, think so, was, yeah. It was like an oh my God thing.
Yeah, really early on, it was like, okay, it's here. The gameplay looked good. Give me it, please, at some point. I think it's coming to Game Pass. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think pretty much everything they showed is nigh on coming to Game Pass. I wonder, because we're recording this on the morning of the second Xbox show, they show it again because they said tonight's stream is extended gameplay stuff. And then they say, and it's available right now.
Oh, right now.
It looked completely finished in the trailer.
That would blow my head off. One of the best things about this conference, which I thought was really good, by the way, like I really enjoyed the Microsoft and Bethesda conference, was the fact that they were announcing and confirming games for the next 12 months. And it was such a big win for Game Pass because like everything or most of it was coming to Game Pass day one, and it just gave me so many games to look forward to, both big and small, or even if like they're expansions or whatever. There was so much in there where I just thought like, okay, my calendar is getting full. I will play that if you give me the chance. In some smaller games where I might not have bought it full price, but because it's coming to Game Pass day one, hell yeah, I'm going to jump in and try it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. Like, obviously, they have their marketing sewn up in regards to like the world premiere, which they didn't have that guy's voice, but they had world premieres. And they also have the Game Pass stuff. It's just a lot of like, you get what the Xbox ecosystem is. I think they are more on more solid ground. They have a big gap where their exclusives are concerned, even though Starfield is starting to fill it. But if you go across to where Sony are, like they're about to launch the PlayStation Premium stuff. They're kind of chasing Game Pass. They're trying to become a contender in that space. I feel like Xbox know exactly what they are. And they sort of go, here's everything that we've managed to lock down. You've already owned all of it if you pay the Game Pass anyway. Just look forward to games that are coming up.
Totally.
Like, you don't have to worry about the monetary side of it at all, as long as you can afford Game Pass, which is a hell of a thing.
I thought it was good that, you know, this first half of the year for Game Pass has been quite sparse, and everyone's been like, well, why should I keep my subscription going?
I think James Dowse swapped his out.
He did. And for me, this was kind of a boost of confidence to be like, no, keep this, keep Game Pass, because we have stuff coming every month. And it's, like I said, big and small, but it's all interesting. It's all probably worth jumping into. And I was like, okay, that's what I needed, because I'm fine with Game Pass being a backwards compatibility machine, but it is fun now to, like I said, fill the calendar out with things that I at least want to try.
Yeah, it continues to be the weirdest generation so far in terms of new releases and old releases. Releases all sort of combining. Let's end on the Capcom stream. Very much a Resident Evil stream. There was some Monster Hunter stuff in there. There was some Exo Primal stuff in there. But just F that game, man. It's not. It's pretending to be Dino Crisis, getting a Regina looking skin in there, and it's not. I'm sure it'll play very well, but whatever. And we'll talk about the Resident Evil stuff. Capcom announced Resident Evil 2, 3, and 7 upscales, 4K, 60, with ray tracing on modern consoles. Resident Evil Village got some DLC, Shadows of Rose, which I wonder if they're just going to do that story will just be DLC now, the way that Resident Evil 8 ends.
Yes.
And then whenever Resident Evil 9 comes out, it won't be Rose as the main character. It'll be a whole other thing again.
Yeah, I'm guessing so. I mean, one of the big questions finishing Resident Evil 8 was whether the post-credits scene with Rose was going to be its own game, whether it was going to be DLC, and now it seems to confirm to be DLC. It's fascinating to me that they're pivoting quite hard into third person stuff.
Yes.
Which I know that you obviously are a big fan of. And
I'm interested
to go through it in the first person mode that they have announced. But at the same time, I like that they had both. Mm. I like that the remakes were third person, you know, more classical Resident Evil gameplay. Mm-hmm. But I like that the mainline series kept to first person. It differentiated them for me.
Yes.
So we weren't having a similar game over and over again. That said, will I play this again in third person? Yes. Will I play the expansion? Yes. Am I looking forward to it? Yes.
I think I am curious with any game that is primarily first person and you go, oh, there's a third person mode, like what Bethesda do, where it just feels like it's not really made for third person. Like it doesn't have the animation priority or the weight behind the character that something like A Last of Us does or whatever. And I'm curious how this feels because they've had so much experience doing third person like modes in the RE2 and the RE3 remakes and what will be the RE4 remake. And I hope that's what they've brought into Village. I hope it's not just we detach the camera and put it behind a character model.
No, I think you've made a good point there, just establishing that it's all in the RE engine anyway.
Yeah.
They already have the tools from the Resident Evil 4 remake or the 2 remake or whatever to make a good third person thing. Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, you would assume, I don't know anything about game development, but because it's all in the same engine by similar teams, that they would be able to migrate the code over and make it a true authentic third person experience rather than, like you say, just kind of zooming the camera out and having it to be a little bit clunky. It's funny compared to something like The Evil Within 2, which started third person and then got a patch to so you could play it in first person.
Yeah.
I like this idea that you could just have these horror games in whatever perspective you want eventually. Like, that to me is exciting for people like us who kind of differentiate are different.
Having a preference.
Yeah, having different preferences when it comes to perspectives. I like that they just go, well, you can have both and then decide later on.
And both are good. Yeah. That's the whole thing with the RE4 remake, which got a little bit more gameplay in the Capcom stream versus the old State of Play stuff, showing off Leon's character model a little bit more, getting a little bit more dialogue in there, and saying that the Ganados have been completely Is it? No, it's not. Is it the Ganados?
Yeah, Ganados.
Yeah, Los Ganados. The enemies have all been reimagined, I guess, to sort of make them more grotesque or whatever they've been doing with those, the mutations and everything of the Las Plagas. That stuff looked cool, but in regards to perspective, you can play that in VR, which I know they've already said. Yes. That's another thing where they're sort of developing it for both. Like, they're developing it in third person standard, and then you'll be able to do first person as well. It is weird that the future of Resident Evil is kind of both. Yeah. Like, they sort of experimented with first-person stuff. They reckon they'd always had this idea for Resident Evil 7 being first-person, and then 8, and then the remakes. I feel like the response to the remakes was, this feels like Resident Evil.
It's not that
the first-person stuff wasn't stellar, but I just feel like that was a nice kind of return to that stuff, because RE4 was such a big deal. And so now they've kind of gone, well, we'll just keep doing both, and we'll just see what people gravitate towards. I'll be playing everything in third.
Of course you will.
I want the third person.
I will play everything in first-person, just because I think it's more immersive and scarier, perhaps. But yeah, I think it's, again, it's like testament to how versatile that RE engine seems. I think it's telling that the new Street Fighter is made on that. Obviously, the last Devil May Cry was made on the RE engine as well. It's a beautiful engine. It seems to accommodate a bunch of different styles, unlike the Frostbite engine, which does one thing good, and then EA was like, make FIFA on this. And people were like, this does not make any sense. This engine seems to make way more sense than that. So the mandate to have more games across different franchises operate on it, to me, is a good thing.
Yes,
I love it.
I was saying to you when I first came in this morning, it's a great time for games right now. Yes. Like, a ton of different announcements and stuff, and a lot of different things to play for the rest of the year. So just bask in it. There's a lot of great stuff right now. And we'll be doing, I think we're going to do our games of the year so far on the main podcast, which will be going out tomorrow, Wednesday. And then we'll just see whatever happens from the rest of the Xbox stream stuff. We've got the Square Enix stuff and the Final Fantasy stuff. And it's just it's a big old summer of games.
It's so good, man. I mean, we've got Forza Horizon Hot Wheels DLC coming out soon, which I will play.
Play Hot Wheels Unleashed, Josh.
I'm not going to play
it's
that.
It's one of the games of last year? When did that come out?
I don't know. Last year, I think.
I think it was last year. Times a horrible flat circle.
I might play Fallout 76 The Pit instead. Maybe.
You've made me a pit, but in that regard, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.